Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKadosh, is Daf Vav, and we are talking about Kutim. This morning we continue our discussion about Kutim, and we discovered that things have changed, and that Rabbi Gamliel had come around, and he asered the Shechita. So why was that? My time agozer bu Rabbanu. Well, this is a very mysterious idea, because Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar once sent Rabbi Meir latiacham Rabbi Beikutoy. He wanted to buy some wine from Kutim, and on the way, hashkecheyahu saba, he met this old man. Now, as we know, whenever we meet an old man, that old man, it's talking about Eliyahu HaNavi, the oldest Talmud Chacham who carries the traditions with him. And guess what the man said to him? Amar Lei, he told him the pasuk. He only told him one line of that little story in Mishlei, which is talking about learning by Talmidei Chachamim. But he spoke to him only about the line that said, Yisam tosakin b'loecha ibal nefeshata. If you are a man with a soul who cares about his soul, I would put a knife across your swallowing place there. Well, he got the message very quickly and decided he better not drink that wine. So he runs back and he says to Rabbi Meir had sent Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, I might have said it backwards, but he goes, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar goes back and says to Rabbi Meir, look, I was about to buy the wine, but I had a rather curious encounter. What do you think I should do? And Rabbi Meir was immediately gazarali him that you're not allowed to drink their wine. I mean, okay, you know, it's all very nice to have these fairy tale stories, but that's not a good enough reason for a gezerah. Therefore, asks the Gemara, my time, so, I mean, how would Rabbi Meir be gozer? On what basis was he going to be gozer? I mean, this was just a catalyst. It certainly isn't a reason to be gozer. Omra Nachum Bar Yitzchak, because Dmut Yonah Matze'u Lahem Barosh Har Gerizim Shayu Ovdim Otam. Actually, they had found the ones that were actually living on Har Gerizim. Obviously, Kutim were not all on Har Gerizim, but there was a group of Kutim, as there is today, that were living on Har Gerizim. And they found that they were worshiping this idol. Now, this Yonah that they found on the top of Har Gerizim, remember, this was actually had been there for quite some time, because when Yaakov Avinu told the children, you know, go bury all of your Avodah Zarah and we have to get moving and so on, that was what they buried. And the Kutim figured, well, this is like a real primal Avodah Zarah, so they were worshiping that Yonah. And so, why is that a basis? Just because there was a group of people? I mean, we're talking about being gozer against all of the Kutim, so it doesn't provide you a reason. Ah, but remember, Rabbi Meir's shita is that we're chashina lemiuta. So others, the normative halacha about world is that we don't take into consideration in terms of our behavior the possibility of something being from a miut. Remember that this was the machlokas that we had back in the question of whether children can perform yibum. So, l'chora, there's no problem of children doing yibum. That's the question of there may not be yotzei the mitzvah, but, I mean, as long as they're capable of intercourse, which only requires a male to be 9 and a girl to be 3, why couldn't they be mekayim yibum and just live together and when they grow up? And they're post-pubescent, then they'll be able to actually be mekayim the mitzvah, but meanwhile, it sounds like a great idea. Rabbi Meir said it's not a good idea, because there is a small percentage of humans that never reach puberty. So how are we supposed to know that they're not sterile? One of them isn't sterile. And if they are sterile, so then there won't be any mitzvah of yibum, because yibum is only where it's capable of producing offspring. And then that would mean that we as adults are encouraging these children to be sleeping incestuously, because after all, this is an isser of Eshes Ach, that's not going to be mutter because of the yibum. And so Rabbi Meir said, you got to worry about that. The Chachamim didn't think you had to worry about it. I mean, that, how many cases have you heard of in which a child never reaches puberty? So why should we worry about that thing? Why? Because lo chayshina lemiyuta. So since Rabbi Meir's shita is that we're chayish lemiyuta, in conjunction with that shita, then he said, okay, so that, look, there is obviously a chashash, and this is a gilui, that that's not something that we should just ignore. So because of that, l'shitato, he was gozer that you cannot drink their wine, and he was gozer, the rule, obviously, was still on the gzeira, because the chayshina lemiyuta is a chashash bi'alma, but he was gozer that it actually would be usher to drink their wine because of that miyuta. So gozer rubo ata miyuta, and Rebbe Gamliel, who ushered before the shita, he actually was going with that shita of Rebbe Meir, but he actually broadened it. So Rebbe Gamliel, Beidinu Namik Rebbe Meir Svirlahu, and they also ushered the shita. He had only ushered the drinking of wine, and he didn't, because, I mean, look, if you're a mumer for Avadis Kechavim, so then wine obviously is a problem, because then you're going to be pouring wine to Avodah Zarah. That makes it also to your Isa. Masha'imkin, there should not necessarily be an Isra of the Shita, because as we just saw, we had the Shitas that said that a mumer for Avodah Zarah would be kosher for Shita. And he held apparently like that. Masha'imkin, Rabbi Gamliel, who held the way the Gemara came out now, and that is that a mumer for Avodah Zarah is mumer l'kalatara kula and is not kosher for shlita. So it simply followed with the same logic that Rabbi Meir used. It follows naturally that we would also aser the shlita. So based on that original shita of Rabbi Meir and the gezeira, Rabbi Gamliel went even further. And he said we should aser shlita. You know, that's a very beautiful pasuk. I mean, for if you're Elio Anavi, and you know, contextually, it sure the hell scares the guy. I mean, man, oh man, don't put a knife in front of my mouth. But what is the pasuk really talking about? I mean, Pashtei Dikra. What's the simple meaning of that pasuk? Ah, those pasukim have to be seen contextually. It's actually talking about a Talmud, and that Talmud is, it starts off like this, Kiteshev lilchom et Moshe. You're about to sit down, and you're going, now there's two ways of reading that. Lilchom, you're going to fight with the ruler, because after all, milchamta shaltera is always a battle. You know, I mean, it's certainly if you're talking about Barnea, I mean, you know, is he here? I don't want to, no, I can't make fun of him, he's not here. Ah, there he is. Okay. So certainly it's going to be a battle, right? So you're sitting there, you're coming into shir, and you're ready to fight, or you're ready to eat. You want to be tasting his divrei Torah. So Pasuk says, well, if you're about to go in, and lilchom et Moshe bin tavin et asher lefanecha, you better look first and understand what you're up against. And then comes the Pasuk, v'samta sakin belo echa im ba'al nefesh ata. You should put a knife in front of your mouth and shut up if you got any kind of Yirat Shamayim in you. So let's analyze that pasuk. The Tani Rabbi Chiya. Ki teshev lilchom et Moshe bin tavin et asher lefanecha v'samta sakin b'lo'echa im ba'al nefesh ata, means like this. Im yodea talmid b'rabo. So if a Talmud knows that if he asks a question to the Rav, the chances are very high, she yodea lachzir lo tam, he's going to be able to intelligently answer that question. So then, Bin, go and fight with him. You know, you got a kasha, ask him that kasha, and he'll be able to engage with you on that kasha. V'im lav, but if you can suspect, he's not really going to know what to answer, and all I'm going to do is embarrass him, then a tavinet asher lefanecha, look, understand what you're up against over here, you know, don't make a fool of him just to try to show how great you are. You should put a knife in front of your mouth and don't say anything, because you're unlikely to get an answer, and it's more likely that you're going to actually embarrass him publicly. Now, look, if you're a person who is, it can't sit still, you know, your nefesh wants an answer to your question. You can't sit there and just keep quiet. So then go somewhere else, for God's sake. Why are you learning with somebody who can't give you answers? Find someone who can give you answers. But the answer is certainly not to ask questions and show off. and embarrass him. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk in Mishlei. And contextually, in just saying the last part, Danim Bal Nefeshata, the Samta Sakin Beloecha, it means if you've got Yorei Shamayim, don't drink this wine. Anyway, getting back to the story. Now, later, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Rabbi Abohu had sent him, Latuyecham Rabbi Beikutoi. Now we're going to try to figure out what happened over here. I thought it was Usr, but okay. Something happened, and apparently this Usr was not accepted. And remember that the halacha is that everything that the Rabbanan goes there has to be checked after 12 months to see whether the Gezera was accepted by Rov HaTzibur. If the Rov HaTzibur was unable to tolerate this Gezera, then it simply is bata. The Chachomim cannot force people that are not ready at the particular stage that the society is at to be able to stand in this Gezera. They cannot make a Gezera insisting, you got to do it our way. It's an incredible halakha. But anyway, so apparently this Gezera never took. So in this later generations, we find that a similar story happened. And Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Yosef, in this case, was about to buy wine, again, from the Iskutim. And, there showed up that sort of ageless, of course, if he's ageless, how is he old? That's a different question. But Ashkeche Yahu Saba, so we found this old man who meets him, and he says, Les kan shemrei Torah. There aren't any people around here that keep the Torah. Now, that's sort of a much broader indictment. I mean, to say, watch your mouth, you know, watch your mouth means choose carefully. But there ain't nobody here that's shemrei Torah. That is scary. So anyway, he goes back, Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Yosef, he goes back and he says over what happened to him to Rabbi Abo. And Rabbi Abo went and told Rabbi and Rabasi, what should we do about this? Since this time the old man's message was, there ain't nobody who keeps the Torah around here, so they made a much broader gezer. So we went from the original gezer of Rabbi Meir, which was against the wine, which was directly Avodas Chachamim, to the Shechita, which was the extension of Rabbi Gamliel, which was the Gezerah based on the idea also of the Mumra Avodas Chachamim. And then, I can't read the print, sorry, Andy. So, and then comes along Rabbi and Rabasi, and they extended the Gezerah to everything, whatever that means. We're going to ask in a moment, what's the difference between not being relied upon for your wine and for your Shechita and being considered an Ovid Kechavim totally? So what do you mean? Lamai? I mean, Shechita? Or that they have a Dinas Tam Yainim? I mean, that was already an old Gezerah, wasn't it? Mehatam Gazer Rabbanan. That was Rabbi Meir. And that was Rabbi Gamliel. So what did they add? What did Rabbi Amin Rabasi add? Which, of course, the question is, if there was a standing Gezerah, how was it that Rabbi Yossi was sent to buy wine after the Gezerah? So clearly, Inu Gazur Velo Kedluminai. The original Gezerah did not pass the test of the 12-month acceptance barrier. And therefore, it became bato, because the tzibur wasn't mekabel the gezera. But afterwards, Rabami and Rabasi, they were gozer, and at that point, people were ready to accept that gezera. Okay, so the question is why that's true. That's, there's different approaches to that. Either, I mean, that once upon a time, like Rashi, things were much more intertwined on a business level. They couldn't make a gezera like that. People were constantly buying, selling, working with kutzim, and it would have just been an intolerable situation where you're insulting people, not drinking their wine, and so on. They couldn't do it. So it didn't work. And therefore, in later times, things had changed, and people were no longer living together on that level. There's other explanations, which are obviously the simplest is that the number or the percentage of Kutim that were actually engaged in that type of Avodah Zarah, whatever, had changed, and now it was, people were aware of it, and they realized, you know, we can't have to do with this thing. You can understand it. We don't really know. Insufficient information about the change. But we can obviously understand social change on many different levels. So that point when they needed to make the Gezerah, it was whatever it means, which we'll ask in a moment, but whatever it means, they not only reinstated the original Gezerahs of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Gamliel, but they extended it as a general rule that they are considered to be Ovdei Kochavim totally. But what does that even mean? My Ovdei Kochavim Gemurim, I mean, what's the difference between being a total Ovid Kochavim or a 90% Ovid Kochavim? And then understand exactly what the point is. So what did they add? Omer Ibn Nachum Bar Yitzchak, they added the halacha of Levatal Rishut V'Litein Rishut. So this is a question of Eruvin. So remember that the Rabbanim are Gezer, that if you have numerous people whose homes open up into a common chotzer, so it opens into a commons, that you're not allowed to carry from the homes into that chotzer unless you make an Eruv together, which is called an Eruv Chatzeros. Okay, now, so everybody contributes to this Eruv, and now it's viewed as a literal commons, and since it's now mine and yours all together, it's like one rishos. So now, if that's the case, what happens if one guy in a chotzer didn't make an Eruv, he didn't contribute to that Eruv? Or worse, what happens if he is a goy? So in that case, you've got to consider the commons as a non-commons, and now you're not going to be able to carry into it, and nobody's going to be able to carry, going to have to treat it like a rishus rabim. So there is an etzah of what to do, and that is that the individual who didn't contribute can actually be mevatel his rishus, and he can say, look, I don't have any rights here anymore, and you guys can take over my rishus. We'll see, you could say my rishus is konui lecha. This is all a takanat rabbanan. There's no actual transaction that takes place, but it's good enough to be noten rishus or mevatel rishus. But if it's someone who is a goy, or he's a mechal Shabbos, he can't even do that. And the only way that you could actually utilize his rishus is you would have to make a rental agreement for his rights over Shabbos, that you're renting his rishus. And that would be the issue. And this is Kidatanya. Yisrael Mumar. Let's say a guy is not a religious Jew, but in public, he's Mishamer Shabbat Obashok. So he keeps Shabbos publicly. So he is included still in the normal halachas like anybody else, and he can be mevatel rishus, or he can give rishus in the event that he did not contribute to the Eruv. But if he's not a Shomer Shabbos, she'eino mishamer shabbato b'shuk, eino mevatel rishus v'lo ten rishut, then he's not part of the acceptance of the Rabbanan on Shabbos, because he's considered to be, as we saw, Mumer L'Chavel Shabbatot is the equivalent of a Mumer Bravar Iskirchovim, he's considered to be a Mumer L'Kol HaTorah Kula. And therefore, he's not Jewish in that sense. Mipnei Shamru, only a Yisrael can be Noten Rishut and Mevatel Rishut. But an Ovei Kirchovim, or someone who's Mechal Shabbos, which is the same, and now a Kuti, which now becomes the same, Achi Yizkor. You cannot utilize that entire commons on Shabbos unless it was rented from him. And how exactly would you go about, if you are Yisrael, how would you go about being mevatel rishus and so on? All you need to do is you say to one of the neighbors, because you only need to be mevatel to one of the neighbors, then your rishus is now part of the rishus of a person who was mishtatif in the Eruv, right? So you just need to go to a neighbor and you say, rishuti is knuya lecha, or rishuti is mefutelet lecha. So in other words, either you own my rishut, or I no longer have rishuts to use things here, and, you know, if I want to use it, I'll have to ask you. Anyway, so then he was kind of, there does not need to be, again, because all of this is a derabbanan in terms of the dinim of Erevin, and eno tzarich lezakot, you don't have to go through any kind of actual kinyan, formal kinyan, and because of that, you would be able to do it even on Shabbos. Mashenke, now that the Kutim are like Akum the Koldover, they would not be able to do this, and you would have to actually rent from them. So why was this? Why did they do this? Because Lamaisa, the usefulness of this is that it very definitely created a tremendous social tension in which people would no longer want to move into a chatzar where there are kutim. They won't have to deal with this issue. And that further increased the isolation between the kutim and the Yisrael that were proper. And that's what we wanted, as we considered their influence to be pernicious. And therefore, the further we could get from them, the better. So if originally it was just for concern about, you know, kashrus and so on, that's one thing. But once we're talking about ovdei avodas kochavim, so then already we need to keep our distance. Anyway, there was another maison that revolved around, remember we said before that Rebbe Zeira, he utilized the svara of, would HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow a tzaddik to eat something that isn't kosher? Now, Tosis pointed out over there that we often find in the Gemara people who did things that were usher, and they were big tzaddikim. I mean, we find cases, Rebbe Yishmael, which were accidentally turned on the light on Shabbos when he was learning because he couldn't see properly, forgot it was Shabbos, and things like that. So Tosfos explains the whole inyan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Inu Mivita Kol HaYada is a reference to achila specifically, because achila being ingested is a tremendous bizoyan that a tzaddik should eat something that should go into his body that he held was inappropriate to eat. That's a tremendous bizoyan for a tzaddik, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be careful shouldn't happen. So getting back to that story, so once happened, and that was Rebbe Zeira himself, remember, who had tainted to himself to try to understand what was going on, whether they were Makabo Vegezeira of Rebbe Gamliel or not. So there was another Maisa when Rebbe Zeira was together with Rabasi, and they went and visited the Yai Inn. Yeah, this was probably somewhere in Japan, I'm assuming, if it's called the Yai Inn. So they were there for Shabbos, and Aitu Lekamayu Beitzi Mamatsumakot Bayayit. So they brought them this, you know, very sophisticated chef they had there. So they had these roasted eggs that had been sitting in wine. Sounds like a very interesting thing. If you want to try it instead of shakshuka, it sounds a lot more appetizing, but it definitely sounds a lot more connoisseur-like, right? Anyway, so they brought these eggs, and they had been sitting there in wine, and Rebbe Zeira refused to eat it, but Rebbe Asi ate it, and he didn't take off any drumas and maestros. So Rebbe Zeira said to Rebbe Asi, aren't you worried about the fact that there's wine in these eggs? These aren't just plain eggs, and we don't really know. This place doesn't have a batat sechshir over here, and I don't know. How do you know that they took off Trumas and Maestras? This seems to me to be Ame Oret, and you should be Chayish for Dmai. So, Velo Chayish Marla Tarovet Mai. You're not worried about the fact that there's wine? So, Ravasi said to me, I didn't think about it. Lavabatoi, you know, I saw the eggs. I figured eggs are eggs, you know. But, so Reb Zera says to himself, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Efshir Gazru al Tarovet Mai, Umistayu Milta, Ravasi Lamechalis. Isura? Is it possible that the gezeira against eating d'mai, remember, it's a big chiddush d'mai, because rov ameo aretz, and this sugya, remember, is a sort of rov kind of sugya, chashin lemiyuta kind of sugya, you know? So there is a place where the rabbanan were actually chayish lemiyuta, and that's the gezeira of d'mai, which is similar to the gezeiras that we just had against the kutim. And even though Rov Ame Ha'aretz do take off Meiser, and all at that time took off Truma, they made a takana that if you don't know the person is a chaver, you have to assume that he's an Ame Ha'aretz and therefore may not have taken off Meisers. And the question is, did that takana, because really, Meikra Din, you can rely on the Rov. Most people do take off at that time Trumas and Meisers. So, question is, when they made the takana, did they make the takana on mixtures of d'mai, or did they make that takana only on actual produce that itself would be chayiv? That's the question. So Rabbi Zereset himself, is it possible that the original takana included even mixtures of tamaya, like something that has one ingredient? Maybe you've got a candy bar that's got one ingredient that actually, you know, that may be recognizable when you read the ingredients, mostly just like a list of chemicals, you know. But there might be one ingredient that is sugar, actual real sugar. Oh, my gosh. It grew from the earth. Oh, wow. I don't eat stuff grows from the earth. I'll buy something else. But in case you bought a candy bar that had a natural ingredient in it, would that be usher because of tamay or not? Must be not, because, I mean, if there would have been such a gezerah, is it possible that Mistaya Milta Rabasi L'Mechel Isura? It should turn out that the holy Rabasi would have eaten something usher. Hashtabem Tanchel Tzadikim. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Takalal Yadan. I mean, look. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't even allow the animals of a tzaddik to eat something that is not kosher. So tzaddikim atzman lo kosher ken. Must be that there was no such gezerah. I got to find out more about this. So nafak Rabbi Zera dak ve'eshkach. This, by the way, you'll see all the time, right, in the Marsha and the Mefarshim. You know, dak ve'eshkach. You don't understand the sugya? Get out there. And you'll figure it out. Okay, so he was nafak. He went out there indeed, and duck vashkak. He was medayik, and he found what he was looking for. And namely, it's a brayta. He realized from this brayta, I have a solution to my question about whether there was such a gezeira. Take a look at this brayta. It says, halokeach yayin lateta tocha murias o latocha alunti. So somebody wants to buy wine from an amoretz, and he wants to put this wine into murias, which is that the fish brine. It's like a fish flavored kind of brine with that doesn't have the actual pieces of the fish in it, or maybe into aluntit. Aluntit was the equivalent of coffee in those days, and that's what you had in a, as a big, it's a pickup drink. And a pickup, I shouldn't say coffee, it was more like boost. What would you say, Gav and Akiva? This was their version of boost. So anyway, so they would make this aluntis with old wine and with balsam and with very clear, filtered water. And that would give you a pickup in the morning. And he wanted wine to be able to make himself his morning coffee. And the din is that if he buys it from an amoretz, or if he buys karshinin, lasot mehem techinin, he wants to have this, the equivalent of trina in those days, not what was made from karshinin, which remember was vetch, which was not completely mature, grain. That was what karshinin would normally we would feed them to animals, karshinin. Okay, so he made this rough kind of trina with it. Or lentils, adashim, lasot mehem resisim. They would make something similar to ground up trina they would make from adashim as well. Should try that one day. Anyway, if you're buying the raw ingredients, you're buying the wine, you're buying the vetches, you're buying the lentils, so then chayav mishum damai. Then you're going to have to worry if it's an amaretz, you're going to have to take off the miser. And for sure, I mean, Ezer Lomim Shemvadai, obviously, if you know for a fact that these ingredients weren't Meisr, of course you would take it out. But Hein Atzman, if you buy the finished product in a, you know, in a dish that says Grandma's Delicious Risisin or something like that on it, so then, where you buy, oh man, can you imagine your actual aluntis in a can? Anyway, but you go into the makolet and you got this pull-off tab on your aluntis. They actually do this to coffee, can you imagine? So you drink your aluntis and it's already been made. Well, then you don't have to worry about taking off trumas and meisers from it because there was no gezeira. And vehein atzman, if you buy the actual finished product from an amaretz, then it's mutter since they are only tarovet. Since they're only mixtures, so then they didn't make a gezeira on a tarovet. Okay, it's offered to be batel barov, but even if it's not batel barov, okay, once it's not the actual product directly from the ground, you don't have to worry about it. Whoo, says Rabbi, see, I told you, I knew it. It couldn't be that there was a gezeira, and that explains why Rav Asi actually didn't need to think about why, whether he should take off mice or not, because he wasn't eating something that was unmixed. What? I don't believe it. Logas, Ruach, Tarovet, Maya, I took for granted at so many different prices that there definitely was a gezeira on the mixture of the Maya. What about the case over here? Okay, so over here, you often have one neighbor goes into the other neighbor. Everybody had their own stove. You had one person in the building that had a stove, you know, and you went to that person. And you asked them to bake it for you, you know. And not everybody had a stovetop either. So you would go and ask your neighbor who had the stovetop to, would you mind cooking this up for me? So you give him an isel, her, I should say, an isel efot or a kedera levashel. And this woman is from a family of Amei Aretz. So the question is, then if you leave her with all of the ingredients, you know, and you gave her these things, then eino chorshesh l'sa'or v'tavlin shava, lo mishum shvi'id v'lo mishum ma'aser. You don't have to worry when you get this back. You don't have to worry, even though maybe she's chashud on having things that are tzaret of shvi'is, or maybe things that weren't taken off ma'aser. You don't have to worry that maybe you gave her the sugar to put in, you know, but she kept that sugar and she substituted her own open sugar that was on the counter. You know, that was actually not meiser. Well, you don't have to worry. But if you told her, do me a favor, put in the necessary amount of sugar, you know, something like that, or whatever tavlin you wanted her to put in, but you didn't provide it to her, then you got to worry. Choshesh l'sa'or v'tavlin sheba mishum shvi'id u'mishum ma'aser. And that's a mixture. There's a tiny bit of sugar, maybe, she added to the dough, you know? So why do you have to worry? What's there to worry about? I mean, it's a mixture. You say, if it's a mixture, it's not a problem. No, it's not a mixture. Because since you told her you use your sugar, you said, asili mishalecha, you use your own ingredients, so then it's not a mixture. It's as if you asked her to mix it in with your own hands, like she's acting as your shriach. That's kamandar of biyadayim tami. And then it means that the raw ingredients were in your hands, and now they're being mixed, and that means you got to worry about taking off ma'aser if it's tamei. Rafram Amar? Rafram says, nah, that's another reason over here, a very basic reason. And that is in the dinim of tarovet, there's a difference between ingredients and between the types of ingredients that affect the entire mixture. So you have, like I would say, leavening, you know, or flavor. That's all that it says. But that's because that tiny amount of color, flavor, leavening ingredients, that affects the entire thing. And those are never bato. So sa'or, that's a leavening. Tavlin is, and flavorings. Those things are made for taima, and taima is never bato. So how would it be bato if I see the impact immediately? Okay, I understand that. But meanwhile, you've raised another issue. The other issue is, it says you don't have to worry that she switched it on you. And if you gave her all the ingredients, then you don't have to think, well, I gave her sugar, you know, but she preferred to keep my sugar closed and she used her own sugar that was open, or maybe it was a lower quality. You say you don't have to worry about that. If you gave it to her, you can assume that that's what it was that she gave you back. But is that true? La chlufe lo chashina? Well, we don't have to worry that the person that you gave the ingredients to didn't switch him? What about Vatanan? We got a Mishnah in Dmai. And the Mishnah says, if you give your mother-in-law, you give dough to your mother-in-law, right? And your mother-in-law is married to an Amoritz. So ma'aser shenotein la, if you are a chover, if you're giving her ingredients, you have to take ma'aser from the ingredients that you give her. Because a chover is not allowed to give un-ma'aser things to an Amoritz. So you've got to give her things that if she eats them, apparently we're worried that she's going to eat them. If she eats them, then she's not going to be eating demai. So, and certainly not vada. So you have to take off maaser because you're a chaver. But the thing is, when she gives you back the food that she ostensibly made from the ingredients that you gave to her to make, you're going to have to take off Maaser again from it. Because Maaser et shunotein la ve'et shunotein imena, b'pnei shechashuda machlefet amitkalkel. We're worried that she is going to exchange the things that you gave her, and she's going to exchange it for better quality to give you her own stuff. You know, maybe she doesn't think what you gave her was high enough quality. But that means that you can't trust your mother-in-law. Obviously, you can't trust your mother-in-law. We're not meant for heaven's sake. We said you don't have to worry about exchanges. We never said you could trust your mother-in-law. There's a big difference. Hasam kerektani taima, it says over there in the Mishnah. Omar Rabbi Yehuda explains it over there. Rotsagi betakanat pita. She wants her daughter to be eating good food. Okay? So, this jerk that she married gives me this garbage to me. I'm not going to use his garbage. So she uses her own stuff. And so she says, you know, okay, so at least my daughter will have what to eat. And she's not going to fight with her son-in-law, you know. So she's Bosha Mechatana. She's not going to say anything about it. It's one way of understanding it. Bosha Mechatana. Others mean that she doesn't want to give low-quality stuff. And then he'll say, my mother-in-law is such a lousy cook. But whatever, it's a good reason in this particular case for us to be worried that she would exchange it. But I told you about a regular case, not a mother-in-law. So I still maintain that normally you don't have to worry. Really? La alma lo chayshina? We don't have to worry about just a regular guy? What about the Mishnah in Demai? V'yotna, you have a pundakit. Now the pundakit, remember, that was something that was actually very common in Europe until the Holocaust, in which yeshiva bochrim would be put up by different people in the community. And that particular person was called your pundakit, but in the time of the Gemara. So now somebody brings food to his pundakit. It's like a bread and breakfast. He has to take off Maaser from what he gives her, and he has to take off Maaser from what she gives him back, which was ostensibly made from the same ingredients. Now, how is that? Obviously, mipnei shechashuda machlefet. We are worried, and we suspect that she switched it on you. So now, over here, we're just talking about a pundakit. We're not talking about a mother-in-law. So why is it that we have to worry? No, because pundakits also are different. Because hasam nami, murya v'amra, what she says to herself is, you know what, this poor yeshiva bocher, he never gets any decent food. He's giving me this garbage, you know. Barberav lechel chamima. Let him have some nice fresh food, and I'll eat the stuff he gave me. Ana echel karira. Of course, there's the opposite way of reading it. As Tosfos says, what? This guy's going to eat the nice food, and I'm going to eat the garbage? Get out of here. I'll give him the garbage. But anyway, I guess it depends on your pundakit. But it's certainly not a normal relationship with just somebody in the street that you have to worry about machalefet. So it's similar to this particular case of the mother-in-law where there's good reason to suspect it. Wait, you're still claiming lechalufi lo chashina? You don't have to worry about just a general exchanging your stuff for what she's got? Maybe your stuff is slightly higher quality. I mean, is that really something not to think about? I mean, what about this braita? Now, this braita is a braita that was stated in days long ago. Once upon a time, women actually used to believe that they were living in their husband's home and on their husband's largesse. They didn't used to say to their husbands, it's my house, I'll do whatever the hell I want. No, they never said that, ever, because they didn't think it was their house, you see. So if there were such women, once upon a time, it was apparently a different species, not Homo sapiens, but Homo sapiens sapiens. So at that point, there was the braita that was stated, it sounds rather strange to us, but look, Neotanya. This Raya actually is based on a social structure of Homo sapiens sapiens. So, Eshet Chaver Tochenet in Eshet Am Haaretz, Bizman Shehit Me'ab. Got a little bit of a problem over here. You have a woman who is married to a chav. So she keeps all of the dinim, not only, remember Chaverut, we've been discussing only the issue of Tamai. There's also another question, which is that the Chaverim are careful about Tuma V'Taira, even on Chulin, and non-Chaverim are not, which, I mean, why should they? There's not a Tzivui. So it was a big chumrah that Chaverim were careful about. Anyway, so if that woman is going to be working with the next door woman, she's got a neighbor, and, it was quite a job to be grinding in those days. You didn't have a button to press. You had to sit there and you had to apply the elbow grease. And because of that, she would be asked and shared the job sometimes to turn the mill, in order to grind. That's okay. But it's only okay when the wife of the chaver is a nida. So she knows that in her own house, she would never touch the food while she's a nida because she has to be careful not to make the food tummy. So if she goes in to help the neighbor while she's tamea, she's not going to touch any food. And therefore, she's not going to accidentally eat something that is given to her and not think about it. If the woman that she's helping gives her a little piece of what they're working on, hey, taste it, it's really good. She may not even think and she'll eat it, but they didn't take off meiser either because they were ameoret. And so therefore, she cannot work with her bizman she tohora, because when she's tohora, what happens if she accidentally, she's used to like tasting it, and so she just puts a piece in her mouth, and since she's not a nida, she's not thinking about, I got to stay away from the food, she may end up eating something that wasn't meiser. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, no, even if she's a tamea, she should not, because I'll tell you, the woman that she's working with might hand her a little bit of what they're working on and say, hey, it's really good, have some. And she won't think about it, she'll just take it. It's one thing to not put your hand on the food and take it, but if somebody hands you something, you may often just pop it into your mouth without thinking. Here's my Raya. Can you imagine an awful situation in which this woman would actually take her husband's food that she's grinding and give it to a neighbor, steal in the open, just take a piece of the cookie dough and give it to somebody without asking her husband permission? Well, I'll tell you something. If she's ready to steal like that, well, she should be in prison. So Ashta Migzo Gosel. I mean, she's ready to steal. Are you questioning whether she's going to substitute one food for another food? I mean, you apparently don't realize to what depths people have sunk. So, of course, we have to be Chayish Ichlufe. Bunch of half-dead people around here, I'm telling you. Try to give them a little bit of humor in their life, but they're chashina and they don't pop it into their mouths. Apparently, it's going to be made to Muslim. What's going on around here? Anyway, so you see that you definitely have to be worried for flipping if you're worried for stealing. Answers the Gemara, Omer of Yosef, that's because she wouldn't normally do that. But she figures this is, the Torah says, if you got a shor that's working it, then you're not allowed to cover its mouth, right? So that means that the Torah says you're supposed to feed the shor working for you. So I got this fat slob of a neighbor working for me, so I should give her something to eat. Which, of course, is ridiculous, unless it really is one of the cases. That's only where you're working on it, Pigmar, at the time when it's finished up and so on. There are cases where you actually are supposed to allow the person who's working to eat. But anyway, but if it wouldn't be for that, Chasra Shalom, she would steal from her husband and give a neighbor a cup of coffee without permission. No way. There was another Maisa in which the entire halacha of a place was changed on the basis of Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Takola Ayada. And what was that? Hey, Eid Rabbi Yoshua ben Zerus, who was Ben Chamiv Shel Rebbe Meir Lifnei Rebbe. So he would know because he was a brother-in-law of Rebbe Meir. And he told Rebbe that he once saw Rebbe Meir eating an Alah Shel Yerek in Beit Shan. Can you imagine? So Rebbe Meir was once in Beit Shan and he buys this leaf, you know, a little bit of lettuce or something, and he didn't take off Meiser. And he just ate it, or he picked it up from the garden. My gosh. Based on that, Rebbe was matir the entire Beit Shan and said Beit Shan is not chayev in Trumas and Meiser. There's no way that Rebbe Meir would have done such a thing unless he knew that Beit Shan was not included in the gvulais of the people that returned from Bavel. There was no Kedushas Haaretz on it for Trumas and Meiseres. And based on this, he was matir it, even though for generations, people in Beit Shan had been taking Trumas and Meiseres with the full Chumrah. Chavru ala vechavu Beit Aviv, the whole family gathers together and berates him. Omrulo, how can you do this? Who the heck do you think you are? Mokom shavotecha ve'avot avotecha nagu bo iser. We have a tradition from generations. You're not allowed to eat without taking off Trumas and Meiseres. Comes along this upstart, and he says we don't need to take off Trumas and Meiseres. It's outrageous. Ataptin ogbo heter. How could you do this? Anyway, so Rebbe decided to teach them that that's not the way to paskin halachas based on avot avotecha. The Rashi mikra zeh. So he brought them the pasuk about Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu went out, and can you imagine the chutzpah? Chitat nechash nechoshet asher asa Moshe. He went and ground up the nechash nechoshes that Moshe Rabbeinu made. My God. Ki ad hayamim ahima hayu b'nei Yisrael mekatrim lo vayikra lo nechushtan. So until those days, people were nichshal in it, because after all, apparently it has magical elements in it. And after all, at the time, it actually, that nachash ha-nechoshet, it was able to cure you if you were dying and you were poisoned. You just look at this nachash ha-nechoshet, and poof, you are cured. Now that's a very powerful magic tool to have, isn't it? So they would actually bring incense for it, and they would look at it as a tremendous power. Okay, so now I ask you something. Here comes along little Chizkiyahu, you know. How about Asa? Asa was big tzad. He went out and destroyed all the Avodah Zarahs. And he was generations before Chizkiyahu. But he didn't think that we should burn and grind up Moshe Rabbeinu's kli. Yoshafat, he destroyed all his Avodah Zarahs. Well, he didn't do that. But Yoshafat, v'lo biaro, v'alo kol avodah zarah sheba'olam asav Yoshafat biarum. I mean, come on. Why would they leave that nachash ha-nechoshes untouched? Apparently, there's a misera that if Moshe Rabbeinu made it, so then it's something that you don't have a right to grind up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, to make this. So how is it that comes along little Chizkiyahu generations later and he's a big shot and he grinds it up? That's what you guys are telling me. Little Rabbeinu HaKadosh thinks he's a big shot and he's going to be Matir Beit Shan. So how come they didn't tell Chizkiyahu, you idiot, how could you do this? Ella, what do we see from here? Makomi nichulo avotav litkaderbo. Things change. Things become clear. Every generation has got new discoveries, you know? So they left him a place in which he could be, achieve his own hod and do the thing which nobody else had thought of, and to go to places where no man had ever gone before. So sure enough, that's exactly what I'm doing. Afani makom hinichu li avotai leitkaderbo. And there's something to learn from here. Mikan letalmid chacham shamar dvar halacha. If from here you learn that if a Talmud Chacham says something and you think, oh, that's crazy and that can't be and we never thought that way, ein mazichinoto. We'll see what these lashons are. We don't say, actually, you're completely wrong, and cancel his mimer. Or some say, in maznichinoto. You see the difference. The Gemara will analyze the words. And some say, in mazichichinoto. Mazichichin means zichuche alev. Yeah, you big shot. We don't accuse him of having gaiva. And that's why he's saying, yidmandi amar mazichin. Look, the words all are meaningful because it says, lo yizach hachoshem ala ephod, right? So that means not to separate something. So we don't tell him, get that out of your head. That's ridiculous. That would be the lashon of mazichin. Maznichin would mean leave it alone. Dechtiv ki lo yiznach lo olam Hashem. Man di omer mazchichin, to accuse him of being a bal gaiva. That's the Tanya. Misha rabu zichuche halev. Rabu machloket be Yisrael. Everybody's got his own opinion, and every we call that is zichuchim. So you see from here that it's not something that you do to accuse people of just because they're going against what the norm was once upon a time. There's a concept of makom inichuli avotai lizgader. So, okay, now there's obviously, there are new elements that are in this gala here, right? I mean, what would be the machlokas actually between the previous generations? Well, why didn't Asa, why didn't Yehoshaphat destroy the Nachash HaNechoshes if they really were worshiping it? So, the pashtus is because when the Nachash HaNechoshes was made originally, it was just as likely that people would attribute supernatural powers to it, right? That's how Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, make this thing. And it's the same way as Rashi says in Bereshis, look, you know, if you want to use the world in ways that are absurd, go right ahead. I'm not going to stop you. Right now, this is what we need to do. We make an Nachash HaNechoshes, and those people who want to be piker, let them go to hell. That's all, which is basically what we said. We don't stop people from having wrong opinions. We do the right things, and it's up to them to have their opinions about the right things. And that was included in the original takana of HaKadosh Baruch Hu insisting to make a Nachash HaNechoshes, wasn't it? So then why should we destroy something where the reason that we're destroying it is included in the original giving of it by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That's a pretty good taina. And in fact, we'd have to worry about, and why indeed did Chizkiyahu think that we could avoid that? Am I talking to anybody? Hello, calling all cars. Maybe I should get a better telephone. You know. Anyway, I do have one of those kit phones, you know, with the old little wheels on it you pull around with a string. Try using that one. Anyway, Rabosai, I will tell you a suggested answer, which I think is a brilliant answer. And that is the question of how you read the Mishnah of V'chinochash memit v'nachal nachash mechayeh Ela. So now the question is, that calls man shall you Yisrael mistaklim klapim ma'ilam hayu mitrapim v'im lav hayu metim. And what does that mean? There's two parts to that Mishnah, you'll recall. V'chi yadav shal Moshe osot milchama oshavrot milchama. I don't know, maybe you don't remember the old song. But that's the first part of the Mishnah. And as long as Moshe held his arms up, then ayum mitgabrim v'im lav ayum noflim. So that was part of the question. And so the Mishnah apparently has put together these two things. If Yisrael is mistaklim klapi malo, so then they would be menatzeach. Now, in the question of mistaklim klapi malo, with the yodav shel Moshe, the people who were fighting the war, does it literally mean they looked up and they saw Moshe's hands? Of course not. They're busy shooting. That's all we need is to look up and miss the enemy. So what it means is if internally they focused and their das was that this is dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hatzolah, then they would be mistakel klapei mala. That's what it means to look and believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, question is, what does it mean in the Nachash HaNechoshes? Because over there, mistakel could mean mistakel. Or it could mean the same thing, which would mean that even if you're looking at the Nachash HaNechoshet, if you were thinking about it as some nonsensical thing, you would drop dead from the poison. It wouldn't help you in the least. You would have to be mistakel klapei mala. That's the machlokas. So if you learn that originally the Nachash HaNechoshes only worked if you actually understood that it was coming milamala, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu never said to make something that people could mistake for an Avodah Zarah because they would have dropped dead. But that doesn't happen today. And therefore, the fact that Hashem said to make it doesn't mean we should keep it. Let's destroy it. If you learn that the meaning in the Mishnah, Mistaka Klapimala, that part is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu's hands, but when it came to the Nachash HaNechoshet, you just had to look at it. Then you're not allowed to destroy it. That was the machlokas between Chizkiyo and Asa and Yehoshaphat. Isn't that sweet? You can't even share sweet things.
I never really quite understood it. Could Rabbi explain it again? Why would you be allowed to keep it if people are worshiping it as a dessert?
If HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that these stupid meat brains are always going to be taking things as magic, and I don't care, make it anyway, so then who are you to say people think it's magic? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, make it even though people think it's magic. So included in the original tzivui was the fact that people will be toye acharot and ascribe higher powers to the Nachash HaNechoshet. Hashem said, I'm willing to risk that. Just like I'm willing to put into the Torah Naaseh Adam. And all the apikursim will say, you see, there are many gods that have to discuss it between them. This is the, you know, the Greek Imperium over here, you know. I don't care, as Rashi says. Let them think whatever the heck they want. I'm going to tell it the way it is. Okay, so then that means that that's included in the mitzvah to make the Nachash HaNechoshet, right? But if there was no danger of that, then because they would drop dead if they thought it had magical powers,